Welcome to the Passive House Podcast, brought to you by Passive House Accelerator, a catalyst for zero carbon building. For news, inspiration, and connections from all flavors of Passive House, check out passivehouseaccelerator.com. Sign up to receive regular updates about events, get your questions answered, and contribute to the community dialogue. There's loads of free information for experienced professionals and people just starting out on their Passive House journey. We hope to see you at one of our weekly Passive House Accelerator live webinars. In the meantime, here's this week's Passive House podcast. Hello and welcome back to another special episode of the Passive House podcast. I'm Matthew Cutler-Welsh, coming to you from Auckland in New Zealand, and I'm joined this week by Mary and Ilka. Mary, how are you?
I'm great.
You're looking forward to Reimagine Buildings?
I am, and also to getting the issue wrapped up of the magazine, Passive House Accelerator magazine, which will be out later this week.
Yes, awesome. I know you're very, very busy doing that, which and exciting to get another issue of the magazine out. And Ilka, welcome back.
Hello.
We're going to have a little bit of a break from all things Reimagine this week, and we wanted to get this special episode out because Fierce is doing something a little bit special. So this popped up, and a lot of people probably heard about it, but we thought we should really dive into a little bit more because Fierce is looking for some feedback on Revive. So they're looking at a tool or a process and a tool for existing buildings, so retrofits, and importantly, that includes looking at carbon and how life cycle analysis can be incorporated as part of the decision-making process of what you do, what we can do with all the existing buildings. So really exciting stuff, and this is a great opportunity to provide feedback. So we wanted to go straight to the source, and that's what you did, Ilka. Do you want to tell us who you spoke to?
Yeah, sure. So that was definitely a very exciting interview. And I talked to James Ortega and to Haley Calvin Gold. And they both have been working very closely with Al Mitchell and I'm sure a lot of other people at Fierce on this new Revive certification.
Yeah, so this has sort of been under the way. Graham wrote about this back in September last year. So people have been keeping an eye on things, would likely be aware that this is out there. But there is a call to action, which is to provide feedback on the tool, which you need to do before March 15. So we wanted to get this out. We'll put links in the show notes, but if you check out fierce.org for more information there, and they would love it to get comments, get feedback, to really make this a great tool. So here, let's jump into it, shall we? This is James and Haley giving a bit of a rundown of what it is and why it's so exciting.
Welcome to the Passive House Accelerator podcast, and I'm really excited about this special episode because we are actually talking about the brand new Fierce Revive 2024 Passive Retrofit Standard. So, and I am actually here with James Ortega and Haley Calvin Gold. Hi, it's nice to have you here.
Nice to be here.
Very excited to talk to you about this new endeavor. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what your role is within developing this whole standard?
Sure, I'll go first. I'm James. I'm the certification program director for FIAS. So basically all of the projects that we certify, all of the standards we've been releasing for the past few years have come across my desk in one form or another. So my main role on this particular program release is basically implementation. So once we actually get public comment completed, I'll be kind of taking the reins over on how do we actually get projects to be certified under the standard, and working with CPHCs and raters and verifiers and builders on one-on-one projects as they try to meet the requirements.
Great. How about you, Haley?
Yeah, I'm Haley. I am a project certifier for FIAS. I've been helping Al Mitchell and Graham Wright develop the Revive standard. One of the pilot projects for Revive is actually in my mom's house, which I did as my capstone project in my degree program at Penn College. I've been mostly helping out with the documentation that will require to be submitted for Revive projects. So yeah, really just helping with the steps of the program and the planning documents that'll come together. Yeah.
Great. That sounds super interesting, especially because it's your mom's project. So you have a lot of personal interest there as well. So tell us about Revive. What are the core principles? What is new? Why did you change things from how they were before? I'm very curious.
Yeah, I think so I guess to start with the first point about what's new, what's different. Pretty much everything about the program is different from our old Revive program. So the original Revive program basically followed a lot of the same requirements that we had for new construction projects, which has been basically our standard for a very, very long time at this point. So the new program, I mean, it's kind of written out as like the main three pieces that we want for this new program is that it's good for the planet, it's good for your buildings with quality assured results. So trying to put those together and then work from there to get towards an operable program is kind of where we're at. But the main, you know, actual technical pieces to the program are that that differ from the original program is that we no longer have individual space conditioning targets. So that's a big piece of the passive building program that we've developed so far is absolute space conditioning targets for annual heating and cooling and peak heating and cooling. So those are no longer the setting stone points for the Revive program. It's now a combination of resilience modeling. So basically looking at potential outages in both the winter and the summer to help us determine the resilience requirements, performance, R values, et cetera, for the passive portions of the building, as well as the active systems. That's in there a little bit too as well. So that's the main piece regarding the envelope improvements that are kind of familiar with for passive buildings. The other portion that's very different from our current program is the ADORB cost calculation, which is looking at a life cycle analysis of the building in regards to both energy used over the lifespan of the building, so long-term embodied long-term carbon usage, and upfront embodied carbon, and basically looking at the building upgrade packages of looking at, okay, what if we decided to do these types of upgrades to the building? Are we actually long-term improving the building from a carbon standpoint? But if we set a standard for, you know, cost of carbon, which we can do, and then we determine just the different packages of a one-to-one ratio of what if I took this building and I did absolutely nothing to it, how much, you know, my additional embodied carbon in that building over its lifespan would be pretty minimal, but it's going to use quite a bit of energy is the assumption. And looking at, okay, if we upgrade these pieces, what's the embodied carbon impact on that building versus how much are you saving over its lifespan or whatever you're looking at for that window of time? And that's really the key aspect to the ADORB cost calculation.
So, and you have goals that are basically pie in the sky goals, and then you also have goals that you can implement realistically, correct? What are the pie in the sky goals?
I think the pie in the sky goals are that this ADORB calculation can trickle down not only from the building, but out towards manufacturing and towards distribution of materials and how contracting companies go about their work. So we've got some pieces built in there. Like if you've got one of my colleagues, Al Mitchell, kind of jokes about this one, but Graham is very serious about it. If you've got a contracting company that uses, you know, bicycles to get to work, you get a little bit of credit for that in this calculation. It's really trying to take from very, very early in material basis to getting it implemented in the field approach. So a really holistic approach at where is this stuff actually coming from, and giving people the opportunity to be as detailed as they can be, as they want to be, in terms of trying to offset this carbon impact that buildings have, and then kind of backs it off at some point to, okay, if you don't have that level of detail, having some defaults for people who have the ability to, or don't necessarily have the ability to do that level of carbon counting.
This is, in fact, very different from the first kind of view of the Passive House standard, right? Because that's all about the metrics of operational energy or operational carbon. And this is not only going into, okay, we're looking at materials that are being used and accounting for the carbon, but it's looking at this really, really kind of holistic view of, yeah, all the factors that you are just kind of talking about. So your pie in the sky goal is really to go down to like zero carbon overall.
Yes. Yep. That is the pie in the sky goal. And we think that there is a definitely going to be a learning curve, right? I mean, it's going to take a lot of effort from all phases is kind of what we want to really show with this, that it's not just, you know, okay, I bought this material, it's going in, end of story. There's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. And then what is the goal for now? Like, do you have target goals, just like you have in the FIES core or FIES zero, where you basically go into your software and you figure out what your target goals are? Is that similar?
Not exactly. So the way the current program is set up, it's basically that resilience study that we work through, and then the ADORB, and they kind of work together in tandem, right, to be able to set what you're actually going to try to achieve. So they don't always necessarily align with each other perfectly, and that's kind of why we need test pilot projects, because sometimes your resilience goals can really outweigh potential carbon impacts. So that is one piece where we do want to make sure people are safe and comfortable and not having, you know, any issues with their homes if there is a prolonged power outage. So that basically is helping to set the performance-based piece of it. So we talk about performance targets that we've used in the past is usually kind of this absolute target number for annual heating or cooling and peak heating and cooling. This is more looking at what are the minimums you need to do in terms of R value to different pieces of your building, and U value for windows, et cetera. So the end goal of this tool is that it will produce both of them together. The end goal is this tool combined will provide basically a set of options for our project team. So there's, you know, there's a thousand ways to skin a cat, right? And we can do any number of things. And the goal of the tool is to help start to narrow down what good options are available for project teams. So instead of just going in and going, okay, we could do literally anything if the budget was, you know, infinite, this is starting to look at, can we narrow it down to maybe 10 things, 10 options, sets of options that would all show basically very similar, you know, end use and resilience performance, and then make decisions based on, you know, from a long-term life cycle analysis view of this, is it also going to, you know, pass muster? So it's a little bit loose in terms of that we don't establish targets that you know up front, but it is, I think, more of a helpful design tool in that it will eventually give packages of options for folks to look through and then make their own assessment on, okay, package 4 is out the window because of this, but package 5 through 7 are all viable. And it's kind of, that's kind of the goal is to give a I think Al has called it a cookbook type scenario where you can have a bunch of different recipes that get you to the same, you know, the same meal at the end or an equivalent meal.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. About the tool. So you're saying it's called a dwarf, but in fact, it's a combination of different tools that you're using. Is that correct?
So the tool itself isn't necessarily called a DORB. It's mostly the calculation method is called a DORB, which Haley, at some point, you'll have to look up for me. I do not remember what a DORB actually stands for, unless you know off the top of your head.
Yeah, I have it written down here. It's annualized decarbonization of retrofitted buildings.
Right. So that is the calculation method. The tool itself, I don't necessarily know if Al has given it a name yet formally. Has he?
This is one of the things we're asking for in public comment is opinions on the names of the tool. So,
but I did see that it builds upon or what you're using is Energy Plus. Is that correct? And that is developed by the DOE. So it's a tool. I believe it's free. Right?
Yes. Yep.
And it does a bunch of calculations. I guess it's just a matter of setting up parameters to use it the right way.
Exactly. Yeah. So the main parameters folks will be able to edit, obviously, are the geometry of the building to try to line up with exactly what they're planning for. And then, yeah, because we're using Energy Plus, which is an hourly simulation tool, that's really valuable for running the resilience outage scenarios that are, you know, we need the granular data of hourly data to figure out what's going to happen there. And yeah, the tool is free. Al has been putting it together to be open source so we can have other folks, you know, edit, put things in, help us develop it. And then our eventual goal is to make it a much easier graphic user interface for folks to be able to pull in, you know, whatever kind of modeling that they're used to doing so that they can generate results.
I saw right now it's still based on, I guess, a SketchUp plugin, correct?
Yeah, right now to get the geometry in, we've set it up to be able to get the building geometry in using SketchUp. But Al is pretty familiar with Rhino. We know there's ways to pull in, you know, energy model data from that software as well. And, you know, long term, it would be great to see Revit and all the other programs out there be able to import geometry and make changes that way.
What are people facing now? Are they going to have to learn yet another energy modeling tool, or is this a little different?
It is definitely different. So while it's based on Energy Plus for the modeling, we are not requiring people to go and learn Energy Plus if you're not familiar with it. The tool is basically set up as a set of inputs on existing conditions and existing building geometry. You hit a run button and it will then run simulations based on our outage scenarios in both the winter and the summer. And it will then return the results from there. So there's no need to dive in and try to figure out Energy Plus or any other programs. It's really built to be basically just a user interface that you input data and then you get outputs, not necessarily jumping into a whole new software. It does require you to download Energy Plus, but kind of no more than that. Just needs to be available for you for it to access and run the simulation.
And yeah, we've talked so much about what's different, but what is the same? Do you still have air tightness targets?
That's a good question too. So we have basically, that is also different. We do not currently have a proposed threshold for air tightness. So a minimum air tightness, we don't have that proposed yet. We have put that in as a basically a very cost-effective way to help with resilience. So if you have a targeted air tightness that you want to run for the building and choose something that's not necessarily our current new construction target, which is 0.06 CFM per square foot of envelope area at 50 pascals, you can choose something higher than that for this new revised Revive program. And basically, it will just trickle down into what is your end goal adorb cost, and are you still resilient from an outage perspective for the building itself. So that is something we could definitely use feedback on. I think it is currently built in to be a very low hanging fruit in terms of cost effective improvements on the envelope. But we don't currently have a set in stone target for that at the moment.
That's interesting. But doesn't air tightness affect the resilience of your assemblies?
Yeah, that is true. One of the similarities between the new construction program and this program are that we still are requiring people to comply with hygrothermal, either prescriptive rules that we have outlined in the guidebook, or run an analysis on the assembly itself to make sure that it's going to be okay in the long run. And I don't think this is a super well-known fact, but those prescriptive rules in the guidebook are actually based on a code building leakiness. So from an air tightness perspective, all the times that we are reducing airflow in our buildings, it is making it way, way more critical for them to be able to dry out and have, you know, our vapor control in the correct direction, because we don't have the ability for it to dry out because of infiltration. So we definitely do have, those hygrothermal ratios and requirements still apply. So that's where our confidence that they're still going to be resilient from a durability perspective, regardless of what is the final blower door test number you have. There is definitely a limit on the resilience side. Like, you can't go and put in, I'm going to have 4 air changes per hour or something like that, and all of a sudden I'm going to be resilient. There are limitations that I think people will come across as they use the tool. And be able to figure out, what can we do to make up for that leakiness in other ways. But at some point, it's going to be you can't anymore. It's not possible, depending on your climate.
Yeah. So then the other thing that stays the same is the third-party quality assurance.
Kind of. That is also different. Most of our co-requisite programs we require for our current Revive program and for new construction programs are based on government programs for new construction buildings. So a big chunk of this new modification, this new standard, is that we're no longer going to basically require those new construction programs to be applicable for these projects. So all of our quality assurance stuff, which I think Haley can speak to a little bit because she's been working through this with Graham, all of that is being built out as a portion of the commissioning requirements for the new program. So we've got different documentation that's not going to be the same as it is for a new construction program, but we are hoping to have the same stringency and have the same kind of important things that we're looking for, just not necessarily jumping through the hoops of a new construction-oriented program that doesn't necessarily apply to this, this retrofit standard.
Yeah. And Haley, you're actually working with this program. What is your feedback?
It's been good. I mean, we're not reinventing the wheel with retrofit, and a lot of our required documentation is just making sure that people are paying attention to everything that needs fixed in their projects. Like, one of the guidelines that we have as part of Revive is the EPA Energy Savings Plus Health IAQ guidelines. And that's where a lot of the indoor air quality requirements for Revive are coming from. And it's, that comes in a really easily digestible format where it's just going down like a checklist and making sure you're paying attention to all of these indoor environmental concerns in existing buildings. Like radon, asbestos, existing deficiencies. It addresses garage air pollutants, lead, moisture, mold, pests, everything you could possibly think of in terms of air quality and how to improve that.
Mm-hmm. I guess whoever has worked with existing building knows exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. There's always that something that you find once you tear the drywall off the walls, many surprises. So, and I guess that's your goal, right? To be pretty flexible for whatever comes and being able to respond to that.
Yeah. And documenting everything along the way, like our documentation structure right now, it goes through all of these priority issues in the EPA document. And so it really is thorough in addressing all of these existing building concerns.
So is that something that you measure then, indoor air quality, or is that just guidelines on what to look out for, and then, you know, your air, indoor air quality is just going to be better?
Yeah, there's a couple of mandatory actions. The way that the document's broken down, it's basically mandatory actions, and then there's elective requirements that you can choose to just go a step further. But all of the minimum requirements are really just to make the indoor air quality as good as it can possibly be, and comparable to a new construction project, really.
Yeah. And the other thing that I read on your blog, actually, is that you're going to be able to look at this in stages as well. How does that work?
That's a great question. We right now, the goal is that many people will be able to refer to this standard and the standard setting document and how it's set up as a long-term goal for projects, where right now we haven't yet figured out how exactly we're going to act as the certifying body for those types of projects. We would really love to see project teams, you know, follow these things and do it the best they can without even necessarily getting certified from our perspective, because a lot of times, you know, it's just not in the budget to do that, or you need to look at a long-term type of scenario for a retrofit, right? Stage retrofits is something that really needs to be addressed. And it's something that at this point, government agencies, it's really hard for them to do that because they don't have the manpower to check back in on those types of things. It's also hard for us as a certifying body to do that as well, because, you know, if a project extends, you know, 10 plus years, a lot of things have changed that amount of time. How do you kind of work through that? So that's kind of an internal discussion we're still having at FIAS on how we want to incorporate the stage retrofit, at least into our certification program. I think at this point, it's kind of giving people the resources to know what to do if they do want to do a staged retrofit. So yeah, we don't have an answer for that yet, but I hope we will. And I hope, you know, this can be something that owners, people who are interested in retrofitting their homes or the buildings in which they're, you know, the developer for anything like that, will not necessarily have to go through all the hoops of certifying, but have a really good document that they can point their architects to as, hey, I want to do something like this. Is this something that we could do? And this document is meant to be kind of a catch-all for good practice things to do on a retrofit, not just to go get a plaque on the wall.
Yeah. No, I think that has a lot of value just to have a document to point that you can point people to. So you are hoping for a lot of public comments. What are you expecting to hear from people, and what do they need to know? Can they just read the blog, or do they have to read through all the 137 or 39 pages of your document? What's going to be very helpful for you to develop this more and better?
Sure. I think we're definitely not expecting every single person to read the full 137-page document. This is definitely a standard-setting document. It's not like our certification guidebook, which is written with the intent of helping architects, engineers, builders, and raters and verifiers. This is the technical background of how we're coming up with this standard. So really, I think the most helpful feedback that I would like to get are on the tool, for example, as a testing piece. Not necessarily going to go into a ton of detail on individual sections of the standard setting document. I don't think that's a super great use of everybody's time. But if you are somebody familiar with standards, if you've worked with ASHRAE, if you've worked with an ANSI standard, anything like that, that is the format of the document. It's meant to be something that can be read by somebody who does, you know, develop standards. So if you're one of those people, feel free to, you know, try to get through the whole thing. I think the other big section that I think would be super helpful, if you wanted to concentrate on a specific section in the document, I would look at chapter 6, which is specific to the performance requirements about how the simulations are run. It talks through what the winter resilience requirements are and the summer resilience requirements, and it talks through what the life cycle cost section is. And really, chapter 6, I think it's only like 8 or 10 pages, something like that. So it's a relatively short section in the grand scheme of things. And I think that really is the meat and bones of exactly what we are going to make people be doing and for what reasons. So I would, you know, I think it'd be great to hear feedback on, are these winter resilience requirements, do they make sense for what people are potentially seeing as a potential outage situation? Do people have suggestions on how to improve the requirements for summer resilience, which is kind of it's a tricky thing to do, right? Because more insulation in the summer doesn't necessarily always make the building better. So I think those pieces are the things I'm looking most forward to. And I know Haley probably has thoughts on the, you know, the QAQC documentation as well, on, and what we want to hear from people on that. So I'll let her chime in there.
Yeah, I think chapter 5 as well, the mitigating existing deficiencies, is important. I think that's like one of the sections of the public comment form is, what do people think about the like the fortification and like hazard mitigation requirements, like earthquake, flood, hail, that kind of stuff? Because I don't think that's something that people often think about, especially with FIA stuff. I mean, the buildings are already built durable. And like, I know for the one, like the fortified roof, like it gets down nitty gritty as like 3/4 inch roof sheathing. And it's like, if we already have a fine roof, do we like with 1/2 inch roof sheathing for some reason, do we really need to require them to take all of it off and put on 3/4 inch? Little stuff like that, where it's like, okay, how much do we need to really focus on this? Also the just the general process. Yeah, one thing I want to know from our CPHCs is, how do you want to submit things? Do you want an Excel workbook, like the prescriptive checklist, or right now our template documents are just kind of generic Word documents with an outline. In what way can we help our CPHCs go through the revised standard really easily? And also, how can we make it easier on the reviewers to check documentation and stuff like that? I'd like to see an Excel sheet eventually come from this, but I want to know from everyone else.
Are you still looking for pilot projects? And what kind of projects, if you do, is it mostly single family or is it also multifamily?
We are still looking for pilot projects. And at this point, I think we mostly have single family. So if we could get, massively enormous multifamily as kind of a starting point, I think that would be kind of a goal. You know, looking at something that's like either a 6-flat or, you know, a low rise type building would be super helpful, I think, to run separately from the single families we have looked at so far. The other piece I think to keep in mind with the pilot program is, you know, preferably projects that aren't already, you know, 3/4 of the way done with construction. That's always a tricky thing, because timeline wise, it is tough for us to adjust and review things if it's already done. You know what I mean? But yes, we are definitely still taking pilot projects. Welcome people to reach out through our contact us form if you have something that's you think might be applicable or available, or you're interested. Definitely want to hear from teams.
That's great. No, I'm really, really excited about this revive program. And I am wondering, I mean, there's some approaches that, of course, are very, very specific to retrofits or, you know, existing buildings. But the idea of looking at zero carbon holistically can apply to new buildings as well. Is that something that you're thinking of incorporating into the new building FIA standard?
I think we're going to see how this goes first. But yes, I think long-term, yes, that would be a goal. We definitely want to make sure that this program for retrofits is up and running first, I think, before we go back and try to integrate into the new construction program. But yeah, I think long-term, we'd like to do something like that.
Right. Perfect. Thank you so much for explaining the Revive program to us. And I hope you're going to get a lot of public feedback, and it's going to be very helpful for you. And the deadline for those is March 15th.
Yes, it is March 15th. Mark your calendars. Get it in, please.
Great. Is there anything else that you would like people to know about this?
I don't think so. I think we covered, 85%. We're very much looking forward to seeing people give their thoughts, give their comments. Yeah.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us, Ilka. This is super fun.
All right. And that was James and Haley from FIAS. Thank you very much for taking the time, Ilka, to record that conversation. What were the main outtakes for you?
Well, I think I didn't expect how different it was going to be. So I was definitely surprised about that. I do really, really like how it's more of an holistic approach and not just looking at operational carbon, but also at embodied carbon as well. And yeah, I think it's really exciting to look at it this way. And to be honest, I hope that eventually it's going to be a focus for the other programs as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Mary, you've had a chance to do a bit of writing about Revive, the new Revive program from FIAS. What are your thoughts?
Well, I really appreciate the emphasis on resiliency. Just trying to get the buildings to conditions where people can inhabit them during extreme weather events, because, those are on the increase, and we can't just shut our eyes and pretend it's not happening. So I really appreciate that focus for the whole retrofit scope when you're planning it.
Yeah, and I think scoping is such an important part of retrofit, because it's pretty daunting, the scale of the problem. We have so many existing buildings already, and we need to figure out which ones of those we should keep and how much of them we should keep, whether the structure is still good. We've heard stories about that in the main pod already of great projects where they've managed to retain a lot of the shell of a building and repurpose it or do a bit of a refit. That's all well and good if you've got a whole team of consultants to figure all that out. But for dwellings and single standalone family homes, it's a bit more, it can be a bit harder. So to have something that can help quantify that and figure out not just the likely performance and the cost benefit of doing all the various things you've got to decide on, whether to increase the insulation or whether you're going to focus on air tightness, changing the windows. Those are all expensive things to do. So it's great to be able to have a way of analyzing that up front, but also looking at the carbon and saying, well, yes, I can make this the most energy efficient building, but what's that going to take in terms of new raw materials, and what am I going to have to throw away, and what is ultimately the best outcome from all of that? So, yeah, pretty complicated, but great to be embarking on this journey by FIAS, and they're wanting to get some feedback on it. One thing that is of interest is what to do with projects that take a while. Have you got any thoughts about that, Ilka? Because sometimes a retrofit, it takes, it can be a staged process that might take years.
Yeah, and I feel like that's something that still needs to be figured out a little bit. Just, I guess, to acknowledge that this Revive program is out for feedback, and it's not like a fully figured out guidebook yet. So I think there are still some items that need to be thought about a little bit. But yeah, I mean, just retrofits, yes, they might take a long time. And I think the important thing in general is to be very flexible with retrofits too, and with this program, even just kind of looking into a building, whoever has worked with retrofits or with old buildings knows that you just don't know what you're going to face once you open up the walls or once you really look behind the drywall. So a lot of things can happen, and flexibility in terms of what to do and timeline, I feel like, is really important.
Yeah, and nothing's ever straight. I imagine that the panels that you're most familiar with, they come out of a factory almost perfectly straight, but hardly anything in an existing building is in a straight line, and everything's got to be customized.
Yeah, and especially I think the big challenge with retrofits is always the air sealing too. Because you can plan your air sealing, and then all of a sudden you face some condition where your strategy just doesn't work.
So,
and that's another item that has changed or is new here, that they don't actually require a certain air tightness, which was actually very surprising for me.
But presumably that gets considered in the Energy Plus model, that there'd be some level of infiltration rate. Either assumed or plugged into that.
Yes. It's just not a number that everybody knows that needs to be hit. It's just part of the whole calculation and part of being flexible with these buildings.
Yeah. I mean, we're facing that here now, but even introducing the concept of air tightness, and people are realizing that it ends up being a trade-off if you're purely looking at energy efficiency. If you have a very leaky envelope, then you have to compensate with lots of insulation. Now that has other problems, but it is one of those. If you're just looking at it in terms of energy, it's a bit of a trade-off. Mary, anything else from you?
Well, talking about air tightness, of course it affects so much more than energy, and again that goes back to the resilience of the building. And you don't want too much flexibility, especially in air tightness. So that's what I think is really interesting. And again, Ilka, as you mentioned, this is still a work in progress. And they're accepting pilot projects right now to look at how an actual building would work through this tool, and see what recommendations come out of, what packages of recommendations come out of it, and to look at how air tightness affects, you know, the packages that you might want to implement when you're retrofitting it.
And one other thing that they mentioned was the open source nature of the tool, based on Energy Plus, but with some extra bits on top. I think that's also really exciting so people can be involved, not just right now in terms of providing feedback and input to the standard, but ongoing, looking at how the community can create other plugins or make it more useful with typical design tools that architects might be using and designers. So I think that's a really great approach to really leverage the power of the commons and get other people's input into this project. Very good stuff. Any closing thoughts? What do people need to do from here, Ilka?
Well, I made sure to ask that not everyone has to read the 137 pages that Fias put out there. I think it's enough to go in and maybe read the blog and just kind of look at what's provided so far and see what everyone's interested in and provide feedback. I mean, this is a really, really great chance to have an impact on this Revive program.
Yeah, and you can find find more. We'll put links to the show notes, but if you go to fierce.org, click on standards, and then retrofit is right there. So you can jump in there, read the information, and have a look through. As we said, they are asking for Fierce are asking for feedback by 15 of March. So that's why I wanted to get this out now. I'll give you a couple of weeks to read through it, have a look, and provide your thoughts. This is a great opportunity to help shape what I think will be a very important tool for resilience, decarbonising, and energy efficient, healthy homes. Thank you, Wilka. Thanks for doing that. That's great. And we'll catch up with you both at Reimagine, and then onwards with some more regular podcast episodes after that. So thanks very much for tuning in, and we'll talk to you soon.